Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Final Fate by Kendall Talbot. Narrated by Gabriel Vaughn and Piper Goodeve. Chapter 1. A wave of despair smothered Gunnar's empty stomach. Rescue was meant to be the answer to all their prayers. He'd thought he'd be on his way to his wife and daughter by now. But he'd thought wrong. He wasn't even close. Across the table from him, Pauline ran her tongue over the split in her lip. Her sunburn looked angry and painful, but it was the confusion in her eyes that completed her look of doom. Seated beside Gunnar, clad in his designer clothing, was the man who'd rescued them with his multi-million-dollar yacht, and they were surrounded by opulence, luxury furnishings, polished silverware, a 5-star meal decorated with tiny flowers. And yet, they were still trapped in hell. Swallowing the jagged lump in his scorched throat, Gunnar looked into his rescuer's worried eyes.
"I'm sorry, Charlie, but I don't think you understand. We need to get back to America."
Charlie offered a lopsided smile that reflected turmoil and compassion with equal measure.
"I sympathize with you. I truly do. But the world changed forever on the 8th of February. There's so much you don't know."
"So tell me."
Frustration reared like a scorpion in Gunnar's stomach, and he fought to tame it. If Charlie hadn't rescued them from their crippled sailing boat, he and Pauline and Jesse and Zahn would all be dead. Of that he was certain. This complete stranger had saved their lives, and he would be forever grateful for that. But there were still 35 people stranded on that deserted island who needed rescuing. And nothing would stop him from fulfilling the promise he'd made to them.
"Let's wait until everyone gets here." Charlie's eyes softened. "We all have so many questions. But first, you must eat."
Gunnar dragged his eyes from Charlie to the beautifully presented plate of sushi. His stomach groaned, as if demanding that he put the food in his mouth. He did. The rice was sweet, the fish was tender, and the taste, it was heaven. For weeks, they'd had no choice but to eat raw fish. That had been nothing like this. Pauline's eyes rolled as she ate.
"Oh my God, this is so good."
Months of searing heat and limited water had tortured Gunnar's throat, and just swallowing hurt. After forcing the sushi down with a drink of cold beer, he placed his glass on the crisp white tablecloth.
"Charlie, we were stranded on Palicia Island, which is about 1,000 miles south of Hawaii. We sailed for 7 weeks, hoping to get to the Hawaiian Islands, but when we capsized, our mast broke off, and we drifted for 3 more weeks. Where exactly did we end up? Are we close to Hawaii?"
Charlie's shoulders slumped and he shook his head.
"You really did go to hell and back. I'll let the captain tell you because I honestly don't know. We too have been floating about for months. We're what the world is calling the Great Unwanted."
Gunnar's jaw dropped.
"The what?"
"The Great Unwanted is everyone who was outside America when the EMPs hit. We're all stuck in no man's land. We can't return to America, and we're not able to stay where we are. At least with the yacht, we can move from country to country. But anyone who is holidaying in, say, Australia or Europe, once their visas expired, they became illegals and were locked up in detention centers. Nobody knows what to do with them."
Pauline gasped.
"Oh my God."
Gunnar twisted his hand around the knot on his robe.
"But that could be millions of people."
"Correct. It is. Ah, there you are."
Charlie stood and strolled to a man who walked toward them with an exaggerated swagger. Charlie and the newcomer kissed on the lips, and then with their arms around each other's waists, they turned to their guests.
"Pauline and Gunnar." Charlie's beaming grin was photo-worthy. "This is my partner in crime and everything else." He chuckled at his own joke. Oliver. Oliver strode forward with his hand out. His linen shirt was so white it hurt Gunner's eyes. Gunner rose to greet him.
It's nice to meet you. Thank you for saving us.
It was the least we could do.
Oliver shook Pauline's hand.
I don't know how we can ever thank you.
Pauline's voice quivered.
I didn't think we were going to make it.
Oliver clutched his chest.
My God, when we saw the state of your boat, we thought that nobody could have survived. I can't wait to hear all about it.
He clicked his fingers and the young waitress sprinted over.
Priscilla, darling, we'll have champagne all around, don't you think?
He blinked at Charlie.
Of course,
Charlie agreed.
Please, sit down. You must be utterly exhausted.
You could say that.
Gunner waited until Oliver and Charlie sat before he returned to his seat. The champagne's arrival coincided with Jesse and Zahn's appearance. They, too, were in the yacht's insignia-embroidered robes, but Zahn had left his open to reveal his bare chest. His red hair was slicked back, and even with his scraggy beard, Zahn actually looked decent. Gunner stood again.
Oliver and Charlie, here are the other survivors, Jesse and Zahn.
As the four of them shook hands, Oliver's eyes bulged, and he blatantly ran his gaze over Zahn's body.
My, 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 aren't you a handsome one?
A cloud rolled over Zahn's face, and maybe Jesse sensed his obvious disapproval of Oliver's comment, because she stepped in front of Zahn and clutched Oliver's hand in both of hers.
Thank you so much for rescuing us. I thought we were going to die out there for sure.
Oliver nodded.
By the state you are in, I'd say you're right.
A waitress approached Jesse with a selection of drinks on a tray, and she chose champagne.
Excuse me, Zahn, would you like a drink?
The waitress shifted the tray toward him.
Hell yeah, I'll have two.
Zahn clutched a beer and downed it in one go. Then he grabbed another.
Thanks.
Now, please sit. I have a million questions for you all. Charlie pulled out a chair for Jesse, and she sat. Zahn plonked into his at her side.
So, let me get this straight.
Oliver paused with a crystal flute in his hand.
You are on a cruise ship, is that right?
Yeah, until Captain Dickhead here fucked it up for everyone.
Zahn swigged his beer. Charlie gasped. Oliver's eyes bulged, and Pauline scowled. Jesse burst out laughing and placed her hand on Zahn's arm.
He's so funny. Gunner, how about you tell them what happened?
Gunner wanted to scream. He didn't want to tell the rotten story. Not now. Not ever. He wanted answers. But he also needed their help.
And the best way to get that would be to gain their sympathy.
Maybe then they'd understand how desperate he was to reach his family.
I hope you didn't start without me.
A man in a captain's uniform approached the table with his hand forward. He aimed for Gunner.
Captain Thomas Hutchings, at your service.
Gunner stood and shook his hand, and in a moment of clarity, which he'd been lacking for months, he realized Thomas was the man he'd need to get on his side. Captain to captain, he'd appreciate the turmoil Gunner was going through. For the first time since the captain label had been thrust onto him, he was glad he could use it. He cleared his throat.
Hello, Captain. I'm Captain Gunner McCrae. At least I was until we had to abandon our cruise ship, Rose of the Sea.
He nodded at Pauline.
This is Pauline Gennaro, my second officer, and one of only seven crew who survived.
He turned to Jesse.
And this is Jesse and Zahn, and they are two of only 32 passengers who survived.
Thomas whistled.
Bloody hell.
His shoulders sagged.
How many souls lost?
Gunner lowered his eyes, acid boiled in his stomach, and he had to force his mouth to voice the gut-wrenching statistic that had been blazing in his brain for months.
1,098 souls lost.
All eyes were on him. Even Jesse seemed to be surprised by that number. It was shocking. But it was also the ammunition he needed to drive his point across.
Sir, we left 35 people on that deserted island. I made a promise that no matter what, I would save them. I plan to make good on that promise.
Thomas huffed a forceful breath, dragged out a chair, and sat.
Well, as much as we'd like to help, I'm not sure what we can do.
The waitress cleared away Gunner's empty sushi plate and offered him a hot towel. As he wiped his hand, his mind shunted to a halt. It was impossible to grasp their change in circumstances in the space of just a few hours. Pauline moaned, and with her eyes closed, she wiped her hands with an expression that matched his sentiments exactly. Reopening her eyes, her gaze shifted to their hosts, and she cringed.
Sorry, but you have no idea how nice this is. Just to have clean hands.
She didn't end her sentence. Her expression said it all. As those who hadn't finished their sushi ate in silence, the ocean around them was silent too. Not a whisper of breeze blew, as if the whole world was waiting to hear their story. Gunner placed the hot towel down.
Captain Hutchins.
Please, call me Tommy.
Gunner nodded.
Tommy, we need to get to America so we can arrange a rescue party, and I need to find my wife and daughter, and my mother. I need to know they're all right. They probably think I'm dead.
Hello?
Zahn blurted. We can rescue the others with this boat.
He raised his hands wide.
There's enough room for all of them.
He sat back and folded his arms like he'd solved all the problems of the world. Gunner glared at Zahn.
Damn it. I should have waited to discuss this with the captain in private.
Oliver and Charlie squirmed on their seats and flicked harried gazes to their captain. Tommy cleared his throat.
I'm afraid it's not that simple.
Yeah, it is. Just drive this thing to the island and get 'em.
It's not that, Zahn. It's what to do with you all once we have you on board.
Zahn raised his glass.
Give 'em a beer, for starters.
Everyone laughed, including Gunner. It must be nice to have such a simple outlook on life.
How about we fill you in on what's happened since the EMP strikes?
Thomas shared his gaze between his guests.
That way you'll have a better understanding. Because, seriously, the world you left, when was it?
Our crews departed Los Angeles on the 28th of January.
Gunner's thoughts tripped over an important question.
What's the date?
Thomas's eyebrows nudged upward.
It's the 5th of July. Jesus,
Jesse groaned.
That's over 5 months.
Correct, Charlie said. America is nothing like it was when you left.
5 months.
Gunner was lacerated with guilt. I haven't seen my wife in 5 months. I need to contact her and... Thomas halted him with a raised hand.
Hold up. Please, let me explain.
He rolled his shoulders and his expression darkened like he was about to read a eulogy.
First, let me say that we haven't been back there ourselves, but we've heard enough stories that we know are true. You have to understand, without satellites, there are no phones, and the World Wide Web, well, that hasn't worked since about a week after E-Day. That's what they're calling it, E-Day.
Gunner hadn't even considered that the internet would be down. That would affect the entire world, not just America.
But how? I thought the internet was indestructible.
7 crew members strode to their table, and each placed a plate of food in front of the diners.
Fuck yeah! Zahn bellowed. Is that steak?
Oliver clapped his hands.
I love it. Yes, it's eye fillet.
Zahn sliced off a huge chunk and shoved it into his mouth with a couple of fries.
I haven't had beef since that Chinese buffet on the cruise.
Meat rolled around his tongue as he spoke. Gunner picked up his fork and paused.
Shit, I can't cut my steak.
A fresh wave of shock crawled through him.
I'm a fucking cripple.
Pierced by deep embarrassment, Gunner wanted to stride away.
He wanted to crawl into a corner and pretend that none of this was happening. He wanted...
Gunner.
Pauline reached for his plate.
Let me slice that for you.
He swallowed the rusty razor blades tearing at his throat, and as Pauline cut his steak into bite-sized pieces, the gazes from Charlie, Oliver, and Thomas drilled into him. Charlie cleared his throat.
I'm sorry, but may I ask how you lost your hand?
The survivors all turned to Zahn. The brute shrugged and pointed at Gunner with his steak knife.
Captain Dickhead here got his hand caught in a winch when we were abandoning ship. He would have gone down with it, too, if I didn't chop his hand off.
Charlie gasped.
You chopped it off?
Oliver clasped his hand over his mouth.
Yeah, saved his fucking ass.
Holy.
Charlie's eyes bulged, and he shoved his serving of steak away. Much to Gunner's disgust, he decided to use this information to strengthen their pity vote. He raised his mangled wrist, placing it in full view for all to see, and heaved a sigh.
It's true. After that, 71 people and I drifted at sea for 15 days in life rafts.
He shared his gaze between Oliver, Charlie, and Tommy.
I was just lucky we had a nurse with us.
Yeah.
Zahn spoke with a full mouth.
Gladys, the cripple.
Gunner's jaw dropped. That's the exact word he just labeled himself. He was wrong. Gladys was definitely a cripple. He was not. But Gunner needed to clarify Zahn's seemingly callous description.
Gladys lost the use of her legs decades ago in a horse-riding accident, and has been wheelchair-bound ever since. Unfortunately, when we abandoned ship, we didn't have room for her wheelchair, so I tossed it away. On the island, we put her into a wheelbarrow to move her around.
A wheelbarrow? Charlie's jaw dropped.
That poor woman.
Yes, it's another reason why we need to rescue them as soon as possible. They are all suffering in some way. We left the island 68 days ago. They probably think we're dead. Or worse, that we've abandoned them.
Ah, that ain't fucking worse.
Zahn shoved chips into his mouth. Yes, it is. I promised I would return with a rescue party. Gunner clenched his jaw, forcing back the urge to pitch his knife at the gator hunter. Instead, he stabbed a piece of steak and ate it. Unlike Zahn, who devoured his meal in minutes, Gunner took his time, savoring every single mouthful. Tommy lowered his cutlery and raised his champagne glass.
What you've been through is shocking, but you need to understand that you weren't the only ones who suffered. Millions of people have been affected by those EMPs.
Did the government know it was going to happen? Pauline asked.
Tommy shook his head. The information coming out of America has been patchy at best. For the first 2 weeks, major communications networks like AT&T were able to run off generators, but then without power and fuel, even they shut down. Internet exchanges were destroyed right across the country. Companies like Google and Yahoo and Facebook were hit hard. You know how they all went green, with solar panels, etc. on their roofs?
Gunner nodded, though he didn't really know.
Well, that was their demise. The EMPs used the cables as gateways to decimate everything. So at the beginning, just after the strikes, we received some information. Here's what we know. The EMP strikes took everyone by surprise. The first indication that a nuclear weapon had been detonated in the atmosphere above Kansas was when the lights went out. The first EMP sparked massive explosions, and the resulting fires created catastrophic industrial destruction. The president acted fast. Within hours, he had every agency mobilized. Air Force, Navy, Army, National Guard, CIA, SAS, and every other acronym you can think of. The president himself was in Manhattan. But with the city in gridlock and his chopper taken out by that first EMP, it was hours before he was airborne again in another helicopter and headed back to the White House. Guess where he was when the second EMP hit?
Pauline gasped.
In the air.
Exactly. Goodbye, Mr. President.
Holy shit.
Jesse's eyes bulged. But that was just the start of it. Air Force One went down with the Secretary of State, the Attorney General, and the head of the CIA. The VP was at the White House, but he had a heart attack. And the Speaker of the House was visiting a family in Minneapolis. And she, along with nearly the whole damn city, froze to death.
Jesus.
Gunner's thoughts snapped to his own family, and fear blazed through him like molten lava.
So, who's running the country?
Tommy shook his head. In short, nobody.
Chapter 2. The finality in Tommy's voice had Gunner's gut churning. He looked Tommy in the eye.
But it's been 5 months, surely.
Yes. Tommy cut him off. But the devastation was complete and extensive. The EMPs took out all of America's power grid, along with half of Canada and half of Mexico.
Gunner frowned.
But why aren't other countries helping?
Again, it's not that easy.
Tommy drove his fingers through his thick hair.
Without satellites, communication, and power at the airports, landing planes is near impossible. They tried to get supplies into ports via ships, but, again, no power means no cranes, etc. The ships that did dock were mobbed. It was a total bloodbath.
That's why we haven't returned. Charlie clutched his chest.
Some of our friends.
His eyes teared up. 7 of our true friends were murdered and their yachts stolen. People have become animals.
Gunner tried to picture that kind of chaos, but couldn't.
So, you weren't heading to America then?
Thomas cleared his throat.
No, we've come from Ecuador, and we're on our way to Japan.
We're near Japan? Pauline's eyebrows drilled together.
Well, no, actually. We left Ecuador 7 days ago. At the moment, we're in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, about 2,500 nautical miles from the closest land.
So we missed Hawaii.
Pauline's shoulders slumped.
Tommy's eyes softened.
I'm afraid so. If we hadn't found you, I doubt you would have made land.
Zahn downed the rest of his beer and burped.
Yep, we were fucked.
Jesse giggled and tapped his arm.
Sorry.
She apologized on his behalf, yet Zahn seemed oblivious.
Is there a ham radio network running yet?
Slowly, yes.
Thomas nodded.
However, there are not enough resources. Meanwhile, people are starving, and they have no idea what's going on.
But surely the military is helping.
Pauline pushed her finished plate away, and a waitress retrieved it within seconds.
Yes, but as I said, after the first EMP, the president ordered everyone into action. So the second EMP destroyed masses of equipment and crippled nearly all military assets. I'm talking entire fleets of ships, planes, helicopters, cars, comms equipment. All totally useless.
What about the power grid?
Gunner asked.
Are they fixing it?
Again, it's not that simple. The company that makes the giant transformers is based in Russia, and the logistics to get them transported is just as complex. Not to mention the fight over which state will receive the first round of repairs. There are 49 states demanding to be fixed first.
Gunner cocked his head.
49?
Hawaii wasn't completely decimated by the EMP.
Thomas put his fork aside.
However, they have their own problems. They were taking refugees left, right, and center. Their population more than quadrupled in the space of weeks, and they had to shut their borders.
Oliver cleared his throat.
We heard that Hawaii ran out of food about 6 weeks ago.
Pauline groaned. Had they actually made it to Hawaii, their prospects would have been grim anyway.
Rioting killed so many, Thomas added. In America, we've seen some chaos over the years, but that was nothing compared to these latest riots. People are hungry, and desperate, and scared.
And angry. Charlie's eyes bulged. Pauline sucked air through her teeth.
How are they working through these problems?
That is the problem, Oliver said. Nobody knows where to start.
The seven crew members stepped forward and placed a steaming bowl of pudding with ice cream dotted in the center in front of each person. Gunnar salivated just looking at the dessert and inhaled delicious aromas of cinnamon and caramel.
Oh, yeah! This smells as good as my grandma's apple pie, and that's saying something.
Zahn scooped a huge spoonful and shoved it into his mouth. Jesse and Charlie giggled. Gunnar shook his head. Zahn was an uncouth buffoon, yet he was gaining more fans by the second. Maybe Oliver and Charlie were used to brutes like Zahn.
I have absolutely no idea who Oliver and Charlie are. They could be drug smugglers.
He nearly chuckled at that. Then again, he'd never met drug runners before. He paused with the spoon to his mouth.
So, before all this happened, what did you two do?
Oliver cocked his head.
You mean, how can we afford this yacht?
Well, yes. I'm hoping it's not drug smuggling.
Gunnar chuckled and prayed his gamble at a joke paid off. Oliver and Charlie burst out laughing, and their cackles were almost identical, like separated Siamese twins.
Oh, Charlie dabbed a napkin to his chin. No, we're not drug runners. Lord, I wouldn't know where to start. Have you heard of Chad and Ollie?
Gunnar shook his head.
It's our footwear label. We took men's shoes out of the gutter and onto the Paris catwalks. Speaking of that, what size shoe do you take, Zahn?
Jessie slapped her hand over her mouth, but it failed to mask the cheeky gleam in her eyes.
13?
Zahn scrunched up his face.
Why you want to know?
We may have the perfect shoes for you.
Yeah? As long as they're not like them pink ones you two are wearing.
Charlie and Jessie giggled again. Groaning, Gunnar scooped a mouthful of the warm pudding into his mouth and tried to block out the ridiculous conversation. He'd stumbled into some kind of twilight zone. Everything was moving way too slowly, yet he needed it at maximum speed. It was impossible to formulate the right questions when his thoughts were slamming left and right, trying to work out a solution. The weight of the world was on his shoulders. No, not the world. Just the lives of dozens of people, his family, and those still stranded on the island. They were all that mattered.
He pushed his bowl of pudding aside and raised his eyes to the captain.
Tommy, Charlie, and Oliver, I can never comprehend exactly what you're saying about the devastation in America, but I'm begging you. I need to get there as soon as I can.
The three men all looked at each other. Their blank expressions were impossible to read. Charlie placed his spoon down, reached for Oliver with one hand, and clutched his chest with the other. He inhaled deeply, like he was about to reveal something very profound, and turned his gaze to Gunnar.
I'm so sorry, but we can't risk going into shore. We've heard such horrible stories about what happened to our friends who were mobbed and killed. We won't return until it's safe.
An idea morphed in Gunnar's mind, and although he doubted they'd agree, he had to ask.
If we did change course for America, how long would it take?
Charlie and Oliver turned to Tommy for his answer.
Our top cruising speed is 28 knots per hour. If we went around the clock, we could be there in 5 days.
Tommy held his gaze. A sliver of hope that the captain was going to grant his wish fluttered through Gunnar. He sat up.
What if we didn't go all the way into shore? What if we went in at night, so we're not seen, and one of your men, Blade or Axel, took us in the tender? I'd even swim the final 100 yards.
Sorry, Gunnar.
Tommy glanced at Oliver and Charlie, maybe seeking support for what he was about to say.
But we can't risk it. We'd be sitting ducks waiting for the tender to return.
Zahn slammed his fist down, and Pauline jumped.
You lot are all forgetting about the chopper. That's quicker than that motorboat.
Tommy's expression shifted from gloom to something else. Intrigue, maybe.
Hope and anticipation became one as Gunner waited for the captain's response.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?